You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
How to struggle. Let me frame our discussion here a little bit. If you looked at all of the struggles, all of the difficulties, all of the suffering that a person could face in a fallen world, that's a very large subset of ideas, right? Now, this is a breakout session. We have limited time. What we're going to be talking about is kind of narrowing in on a subset of these issues. We're talking about how to struggle in ministry and leadership. And when I talk about ministry and leadership, I use those terms broadly, okay? I'm an elder of the church, so I lead a lot of people. I lead a home church. I lead disciples. I'm also trying to influence people in various capacities, as are many of you. So I'm not just talking about people who have an official ministry role, like they do ministry for a job. This is people who are trying to serve Jesus. Okay, I'm an official leader in many capacities. I have titles of leadership. That's cool. I love those. But many of us are trying to lead in a different context. We're trying to influence friends, neighbors, roommates, coworkers, for Jesus, okay? So when I use the terms ministry and leadership, we're talking broadly about people who are trying to influence people positively for Jesus Christ. And so when we talk about struggling in these things, we're going to talk about the difficulties, the setbacks, the barriers, the uncertainty and confusion that can happen when we're doing those things. So we're not going to talk a lot about, okay, what happens when you encounter personal sufferings, things like loss of a loved one. Those are very important topics, and you should get some counsel on that. That's just not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about, okay, what happens when we go out into these various leadership roles, and we try to go out and serve God, make an influence for Him, and we encounter pushback, opposition, things we don't know how to handle. What are we supposed to not do, and what are we supposed to do? So, a couple of things that, you know, might fall into this category. How about you're just trying to reach out to a friend who starts saying that Christianity is a cult? Untrue. That to be a Christian it makes you a bigot. What happens when you have, that's going to stall your progress for the gospel. How about your discipling? Maybe you're mentoring somebody. You know, you've chosen to invest your life one-on-one, and the person just stops kind of responding. They kind of get dodgy or flaky. You just don't know really how to get things back on track, okay? Maybe you live in a ministry house, which if you're not familiar with our terms, that's kind of a house or an apartment that people who are like-minded want to be disciples of Jesus. They get a place together because they want to challenge each other. Now, maybe that's going well, but you hit a rough patch where people start losing morale. They start moving out. What are you supposed to do? How do you right the ship? Maybe you're doing community service work. Maybe you're working at a food bank. Maybe you are trying to serve the homeless, something like that, and your organization is defunded. What do you do? That's a setback. How about just, you know, the entire world, as we know it, gets turned upside down like it did 2 years ago. What do you do? Remember the first time we tried to figure out how to do home church virtually? Do you remember what that was like? Yeah, that was a setback. May we never go there again. How about just, maybe you're a member of a home church leadership team here at Dwell. And you really want to grow and plant. That's a goal. We want to bring in a spiritual harvest. We want to make our group so big that we can raise up new leaders and make two groups, which increases our ability to share Jesus in our city. What happens when the things you were doing before are no longer working like you thought they would? What do you do? How about maybe you're an elder or a senior leader of a larger congregation? What happens when your congregation starts to split over a doctrinal issue? Again, you can kind of see the problem areas that we are trying to drill down on. So our material here is going to deal with a lot of that. And I want to spend less time on some of the problems we're going to face because you're in there. You're in the trenches on these things. A million things can go wrong, as you've known if you've ever tried to serve God in a fallen and broken world that's in rebellion to Him. What I want to talk about is kind of like the do's and don'ts for what happens when you encounter one of these difficulties. So let's just say, you know, we got our panic button here. Okay. You encounter, again, I don't know what the struggles are. For the sake of our discussion, it doesn't matter. But you get into a position where a barrier emerges, something has happened where you are not seeing the results that you want. We're going to talk about first how not to respond in the passive direction. Now, there are ways that you can go askew in the passive direction or aggressive direction. We're going to talk about passive forms of panic first. How about envy? You ever felt that? Man, my house, my ministry house used to be so lively. We had some people move out. Like, dude, if we just had like the house that this other group had, like, it would just be so much easier. Like, my situation just kind of stinks. Huh. So your eyes start to divert away from what you've been given to what God has given somebody else in a different context. If you've ever led a home church, it's sometimes hard not to fall into this. Man, something seems to be going so much easier over there, man. If we just had a couple of those people, man, we'd be rolling. It's a form of passivity because you've kind of taken a step back and you're no longer trying to actualize your resources. You're kind of envying what somebody else has that you don't. How about just low morale? You start feeling like, man, just not as motivated. I don't feel like the drive, the passion. That can be a dangerous place to be. Let's talk about this. What warning signs indicate a leader or you know, any sort of influencer might be losing morale? What's that? Okay, so they're just not as involved. Yeah. So, yeah, attendance isn't everything, but sometimes it's a hallmark of something's wrong. Yeah, for sure. What would you say? Yeah, well, that's actually its own entry, but you're absolutely right. Yes, because it's like this isn't giving me the feelings that I used to have, so I'm maybe feel like taking it on somebody else. Yeah. Mediocrity. Yeah. So either in performance, like I'm just not giving it all, or I don't really even care if I see the results. I don't know if maybe the harvest isn't all that. Art?
I think a refusal to challenge other people in your group on areas that are hurting them or the group.
So you're basically like, what's the point? And you know what? I mean, probably everybody has this mindset. What's the use of even challenging them to think differently? Yeah, sure. Right here.
You could be the person who, if someone points out any kind of movement, anything that's encouraging, you're the yeah, but.
Oh,
but you know they've been here forever, so it really feel. Yeah, but there was this many people last year, so the yeah, but person's kind of correct.
Yes, so low morale could just be like naysaying, cynicism, skepticism. You're the scoffer. Oh, don't be that. Don't sit in the seat of that person. Yeah, come on here. Yep, and yours really, those two go hand in hand. It's amazing how fast naysaying and scoffing can sap the creativity in a group. Because it's like, I don't want to like, the idea is just going to get shot down anyways. Why even offer something new? Yeah, one more.
Maybe prayerlessness individually.
You guys are thinking alike. Prayerlessness. Yes, if you get into prayerlessness, you're kind of like, you know, when somebody has hope, when they have a vision, they want to get God involved. But if that starts to sag, then our communication with God is going to as well. So you can go from envy, you go to low morale. How about just throwing up hands? You ever done that? Ugh, what's the point? I mean, I don't know. You'll sometimes see this. We see this sometimes with, hey, I heard you were trying to reach your friend from class. It was cool that you got like met somebody from class. Like, how's he been going? Like, I don't know. I just can't get a hold of him. Oh, cool. So, like, just what have you been doing? Like, well, I texted him. That's active. Sick. That's, people love text. What else? I don't know. What else could be done? You're like, okay, that's a resignation. That's a throwing up of hands. For thousands of years, the community of God has marched forward without text messaging. Somehow they found a way, right? Now, texting is very effective. Good. I'm glad we went to that. We should not avoid that. But it's also like you see the mentality where it's just like, rather than like, okay, I could brainstorm three or four other things to do, I've done what I know and has worked in the past, and then I've basically adopted the mentality that nothing else could work beyond that. Okay, that's a bad sign. That's a passive response. Sometimes it comes directly from low morale. I'm not that motivated, so if what I'm familiar with doesn't work, then I believe on some level that nothing will. How about just super spirituality? And let me explain a little bit more what this means. How about like adopting the mindset that, well, results don't really matter. Or results, I mean, hey, results are God's department. I mean, there's no way that we can do anything. So we just need to, I'm just going to let go. I'm going to kind of follow God. I'm just kind of like walk with him. And, you know, eventually he'll bring the results. Now, all of those things I've said are true. Results ultimately are up to God. God is the one in control. You and I cannot save a single soul, okay? But God has also made it very, very clear that he wants to use us. In 1 Corinthians 3, it says that you and I are co-laborers with Christ. Paul in Colossians 1 said, I strive with all of the energy that works within me to present men and women complete in Jesus Christ. Does God control is God ultimately in charge? Of course he is. Does he set the tone? Does he empower the ministry? Absolutely. It's the Spirit that quickens. It's the Spirit, and to use a common term, it's the Spirit that gets stuff done. The flesh counts for nothing. And yet, Jesus sends out his workers. He has, and he did in his earthly ministry, and he left us with a call to go out and make disciples. Of course that's true. And so what happens, I've seen in my experience, is that often people who don't get the results that they want alter their theology to say, well, I don't really have a part to play, and results actually aren't that biblical. And maybe it's actually kind of man-centered to like want to get a harvest. Maybe that's just kind of like crude or crass. And it's like, I don't think so. God wants his kingdom to grow. Of course he does. Think about how many times the book of Acts talks about how many people came to Christ. I don't think we think the author Luke is just man-centered when he talks about that. Now, do I decide how many people come to Christ? Absolutely not. But do I want to be participating in the work of God, winning souls to his kingdom? Absolutely, I do. So we don't want to just change our theology to fit a situation that's not ideal because it makes us feel better. How about bitterness? This often leads to this, envy. We look at what God is doing in other churches, other people's lives, other people having success, winning their friends or family, other people getting opportunities to teach or lead in various capacities. And we envy that, and ultimately our anger gets directed at God himself. And it's not just that we're envious of what God has provided to other people, but we're actually angry at God for what we see as unfair treatment. Dangerous place to be. Fatalism. The belief that, you know, it's kind of the terminus in some ways of low morale. The idea that I feel bad now, and then that descends into thinking that I feel bad now and I'm only going to feel worse. And actually, nothing. It's not even worth it, or I'll never be able to right this ship at all. And then the ultimate form of passivity, obviously, is quitting. Quitting. Throwing in the towel, giving up. Just people have quit. I know longtime leaders who 5 years ago were seeming like they're going to set the whole city on fire for Jesus who have quit and are not doing Christian work right now. Never, may that never happen to any of us. Let me ask you this, to continue our discussion here. How would you counsel a leader who feels like they just want to give up the fight? What do you do or say that might be able to help somebody avoid this fate? Yeah.
I always think of that verse where he says, Lord, where else would I go? You have the words of eternal life.
Hmm.
And just maybe encouraging them that they're not alone in their experience, and this is something that we have examples of persevering through the very real temptation for legit reasons that someone would want to quit, and it's worth
Let me pick up on that last thing that you said. I think it's really good. There is a sense where we just are realistic about, like, these things that you're facing are difficult. Like, let me hear more about that. We want to get on their level and connect with them there. But also, yes, these things are real and significant. You're basically trying to say, I could see how a rational person would be affected by the things you're experiencing, of course. However, also, we need to persevere through those things because God walks with us through them. Yeah. Dirt.
I feel like with that, too, I was thinking of, like, James 1 about the value of endurance.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to, like, realistically look at, like, is enduring with God the most valuable thing in my life? Because, like, that's what God says it is. It says that, like, practically it's valuable in the fact that it gives us wisdom, it gives us intimacy with God. But also in the grand scheme of things, it also presents us with heavenly rewards, which is, like, what we're working towards. And so it's, like, even
sure.
if I feel like I'm toiling in vain, it's, like, God says you're not.
Yep.
And so it's, like, at the end of the day, it's, like, there also comes an aspect of, like, who are you believing about these things? Do you believe in yourself and what you view as, like, rewards and, like, what you're gaining? Or are you listening to God about, like, what God says is the most valuable thing?
Well said. I mean, the idea that this work is going to matter, and when we get there, we're going to be very pleased by the rewards that our labor yielded. You also said something, too, at the beginning about endurance, just like, it's nice to have endurance. Have you ever trained for, like, a sports team or, you know, try like a 5K or a marathon? When you first start that stuff, it's awful. Then your cardio kind of sucks. But then when you're in that race and you're not flagging and out of breath, it's awesome. You feel like this is so great. It was actually worth it. There's a spiritual analogy there for sure. Yeah.
I was just thinking of the verse where it talks about, like, I fought the good fight, like, I finished the race.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that, like, I try to think about a lot of, like, when you get to the end of your life and you, like, get to see Jesus and you get to see God, like, face to face, like, do you want to say that you quit? Like, and, like, have to kind of, like, grapple with that yourself? Or do you want to say, like, I gave it everything I had, like, even when I did feel like quitting? Because feeling like quitting is, like, pretty common thing if you're, like, radically living for God. Like, it's, like, you're going to face a lot of rejection. And I don't know, like, I think personally for me, I'm, like, I want to know that I did everything I could in my power to, like, do work for God and be able to, like, say that to his face, I guess. So, like,
yeah.
Thinking about the eternal perspective.
Yes, and actually the one day we will stand before Christ.
Yeah.
And again, for those of us who have a personal relationship with Jesus, like, where we end up eternally is secure whether we quit or not. I'm firmly in that camp.
Yeah.
But we want to like, please people that we really love and care about. And that should be the motivation. Like, I love Jesus so much, and I want to be like him, and I want to, like, do what he says to do. So I don't want to quit. I basically want to be there and say, like, I tried imperfectly always, mm-hmm. but I really tried, and I made it to the end.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to be home. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cooksey?
I think, too, reminding them of God's sovereignty, that in his sovereignty, he's elected to put them in this position of leadership at this time.
Hmm. Yeah.
Through the situation that you're in.
Yeah. That's been kind of a theme. Rhino talked about it last night. Mason talked about it this morning and last night. Just that there are things that God can teach us in the face of difficulty that he might not be able to teach us at other times. And so there's definitely a lesson there. Yeah.
In our home church could then also result in, like, multiple plants in the future, and we just don't know what God has in front of us.
Good point. We don't always know what God is doing at this time. We do know that we have eternal rewards for faithful labor, that our toil is not in vain, that, you know, we will in due time reap a harvest if we do not give up. So we have to kind of combine these truths, and that gives us a picture, a hopeful picture, rather than one of despair. Yeah, one more.
I like the, your comment earlier about being able to identify with them on why it's hard, but I also think not just identifying with, but helping them internalize and understand why it is that they want to quit. Because sometimes people will present like, here's what's going on, I want to quit, but it may not actually be what they're thinking. Their thinking may be pretty unclear about their own circumstances and what's going on, and trying to get to the root of what's really going on inside your heart. And you know, is it a belief system in God? Is it something else? I've seen a lot of different
types sure.
of things. Try to dig into some of that so you can apply the right counsel to where they're coming from.
Yeah, the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but the man of understanding draws that out. Yeah, I think that's really wise. Okay, well, there's half of our no-nos. Let's go to the aggressive section. So again, we encounter one of these struggles, a setback, a barrier. Again, fill in the blank for what you're going through. There's an aggressive way to panic. Complaining. Oh, we got to take a few minutes. Let's brainstorm the damage that complaining can cause in a group or with the specific ministry context in which you're working. How does complaining, how does that derail things even further? Why is that bad move?
Demoralizes your efforts, like what you've been doing. Like you're not on God's plan. It's an assumption that whatever you've been doing is not within God's plan for your fruit.
Okay. So it's demoralizing. It kind of like calls into question whether what you've been doing is good. Yes. Right here.
I think it's really easy to misinterpret complaining, and it can like have all sorts of random effects. Like people could, you know, complaining could start rumors about things. People could say, that person's really pissed. Well, maybe you weren't actually pissed. You were just having a bad day. Like,
yeah.
Like it just creates all sorts of bad, weird interpretations about maybe that person or the situation.
Man, great point. Well said. Art?
In the context of ministry, you are trying to display a different way of life that we believe is beneficial and ultimately more fulfilling. How are you going to get that across when the only thing you're conveying is that it completely sucks? You know?
Well said. It's like, do all things without complaining and grumbling. Why? So you can stand out by positive contrast. Everybody in the world, you don't need to go to a church to hear complaining. I mean, it's everywhere, right? You should come to a church where people are actually grateful and hopeful. Yeah, what do you think?
I think it's a self-sabotaging thing because as you're trying to lead and influence people, that is necessarily centered in loving them. But as you complain to them, you're really hurting them because whenever I complain to people, it can be so aggressive and it just slimes the people I'm closest to in a way that they'll tell me. And I need to know that. And so if that's just happening to people around you, especially to your whole small group, home church, whatever, there's people who might not say anything to you, and then it just keeps going, and then you're never going to influence and actually win out in what you want to do.
Yeah, it will definitely erode your influence, and slime. If you do come away, when you're with a complainer, you do feel a little bit slimy. It's also contagious. So the slime just keeps running downhill. Yeah, what do you think? Yeah, right here. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about how it would be really hard to encourage people. So just thinking about all the negative things and complaining about it, and then it's impossible to be like, you know what, that positive thing was really cool. I'm going to encourage them. It's like, I've just been complaining this whole time.
Right. So people are too slimy to hear the encouragement that you punctuated your sentences with at the very end. Yeah, what do you think?
especially when you're struggling maybe with like a specific person you're trying to work with.
Yeah.
And then you're complaining about them.
Yes.
It's like you're really damaging your relationship with that person, then it's hard to recognize when they actually maybe are making progress.
Yeah.
Making a turn. And then also you're kind of, you know, clouding other people's view of that person, and
yep.
It's really unfair to the person that you're complaining about.
Totally. Because a lot of times, you're right, you spew this negativity, and like, look, I mean, we all have that there's a temptation. Nobody's above this, right? I'm not above it, that's for sure. A lot of times if you spew the negativity, you know, after you stop, you're thinking about it, you're taking it to the Lord, and your opinion mentally kind of rights the ship, but the slimed among you don't have the benefit of like your kind of like more even-keeled assessment. They just have the negative. So that has a staying power to it, you know? Yeah, good, 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 good. We want to avoid complaining. It's kind of a hard thing where to categorize it. You could really probably straddle it between passive and aggressive because you're saying something aggressive, but you're not really, it is actually prohibiting you from doing anything. So in that way, it's kind of a passive step, but it feels aggressive a lot. So that's why we put it over here. How about just forcing? You could say, you know, sometimes we use the phrase around here, it's man-centered, right? I spoke earlier that, you know, there's a role, the supreme role that God plays in accomplishing his purposes, but he's enlisted us, so our effort matters. I think sometimes an aggressive way to panic is just, I'm going to just it's just my effort that actually matters, and it's just doing more, like you're almost like banging the hammer onto the nail, and it's just that's the only thing that you can do. You're just trying to shoehorn things into the way that you've done them in the past. And again, you're not really being empowered by God. You're not seeking out his direction. You're basically just saying like, I know what's going to happen and I will just kind of force this to get the results that I want. Bad move. A lot of times, you know, we said sometimes you can't always see what God is doing. Sometimes when you hit an obstacle or a barrier, God is calling you to do something in a slightly different way that could be better. And I mean, I've experienced that in my ministry. My leadership of home churches especially, like, we have done it this way, but actually this is like, situation is calling for something new. I don't know what that is, but the worst thing that I could do is just double my efforts in the way that is not currently working, okay? Just because I think that, you know, my personal oomph is going to see, you know, is going to win the day. Sometimes I need to not just force, I'm not going to stop exerting effort, but I'm not just going to kind of be self-willed and push forward my agenda. I'm actually need of sitting there before God and asking him to give me maybe a slightly new direction. How about accusing? Yeah. It's like the aggressive form of some of the stuff we looked over there, right? You know, actually, we this home church would be rolling if it weren't for my co-leader over here. Bad. You know who does a lot of accusing? Satan. Yeah. Good word. Don't want to be like Satan, right? It's as easy as that. Should I accuse people or no? Huh, Satan does that. Probably not. Let's steer clear of accusing. But it can be easy, right? Because look, I'm just gonna assume for the sake of camaraderie here that we're sold out for the kingdom of God. We're dedicating a large portion of our life to God's kingdom work, as we should. So when we get into that and we are vested at that level and things are not working, there's all sorts of temptation to lash out. And one of the ways it's a wrong way to deal with that pressure is to just start accusing. We always want somebody to blame, right? And if we just start pointing fingers, we're going to be in big trouble. There's a saying that I really like. A good leader, when things are going great, looks out the window at other people. A good leader, when things are going bad, looks in the mirror to figure out what he needs to do differently. A bad leader, a hireling, as John 10 would have us hear, when things are going great, looks in the mirror. Look how much I've done. And when things are going poorly, looks out the window at other people to accuse and point blame. Let's be good leaders and avoid accusing. How about legalism? Legalism can take a lot of different forms. And what God has called to mind for this purpose is basically focusing only on external rather than internal factors and trying to do what you could call kind of superficial behavior change just to make your endeavor look better than it may actually be. Here maybe just one example of that. Okay, I want my home church to grow. Yeah, I've been in a home church for 4 years, which is the longest home church cycle. We say a cycle every time we plant. That's kind of a new cycle, just the terms we use here at Dwell. I've been in the home church cycle for 4 years, going on 5. Longest time that we've ever been in a home church without planting. And I'm with, when we started, I'm an elder in the church, and I'm with another elder, Brett McCallum. So it's like when we were like joining up in this home church, we're like, dude, we are going to get this rocking, we're going to plant this group. And I think in the end, what God has done, he's like, you just made it super easy. I can humble 2 elders with 1 home church. Thanks so much. Because you're going to have a long cycle. There's going to be a pandemic, and there's going to be some news people who don't like your church. Yeah, there's going to be some people who walk away. Now, we're back on track, right? We're doing well. I'm really pumped, so thankful. God has taught us a lot. And one of the things is that we have as a goal is we want to grow the numeric number of people that come to our home church, right? I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not shy about that. Of course I want that. Now, if people start fading away and they have doubts and they start to have problems that surface, if my only concern is just getting people there so I can count them in the attendance, that's a problem. Do I want them to attend home church meetings? Absolutely, because that is a biblical command for the church. We should not give up meeting together. We should see people who are damaged and broken and in need of help. We should get them around the body of Christ. We should have that as a goal. But if that's only the goal is numbers or just people being around a certain amount of times per week, that's a problem. But that's a legalistic way of solving a problem. Now, I hope that I can address some of their concerns. I hope that I can encourage them and show them scripture and all of these things that motivates them for the right reasons to throw in with their whole lives for God, which includes coming around to home church meetings, to our men's and women's Bible studies, to our bigger meetings where we have our elders and pastors teach. I want that. But again, if I'm focused only on the external, if I'm only trying to just change people's behavior on a superficial level without giving them reasons for that or something, I'm falling into legalism. I'm falling really into pragmatism where I only care about results, where basically the ends just justify the means, and as long as people are around and I can show that, I can demonstrate that, then I feel like I'm doing a good job. We want to avoid that. Infighting, you know, we can probably see how accusing can lead to infighting, because if you're about to point the finger at somebody else, somebody else probably has the same opinion about you. And if that's the ethos that you've got going in your house or your leadership team or the people that you serve with in a community service role, that stuff is just going to come right back in your face. And before long, you're just infighting rather than you're kind of locked arm in arm moving forward under the leadership of God. And then I think kind of the terminal end here is just, they call it beating the sheep, right? Have you heard that term? It's an awful term. I'm glad maybe you've never been beaten. I'm glad for that, okay? I hope that's the case. It's a term where it's like a leader just takes out his frustration on his people rather than loving them. I mean, that is the ultimate betrayal of God who has entrusted us in various capacities, like I mentioned earlier, to go out and love and care and shepherd the flock, providing for them, protecting people in various ways that God is going to call each of us to do. And if we just lash out and take our frustrations out there, we're not seeing the direction that we want. We're not taking the ground we thought we would. We're just basically accusing, taking that out, being harsh with people, lashing. That is so bad. And I've seen it happen. And we want to get away from that. We never want to see that happen. So here's kind of our no-no list. Does anybody have any questions before we're definitely going to end on a positive note, okay? Anybody have any questions or need clarification on any of this before we roll? Okay. Well, if something comes up, we'll leave some comments and questions time at the end. Okay. Now, so that's how to struggle poorly. How to struggle well? Resist panic. Yes. So that panic button was the problem, right? We got to put that to the side. Well, just throw it in the trash. Don't save it. Resist panic. How do we do that? Well, we need to outline the main problems. I'll tell you what. Sometimes we think we know what the problems are when in reality we do not. And We think we can understand how damaging it would be, what a waste of time it would be to treat a problem that does not exist and ignore the problem that does. Think about it in a medical context. If you go to the doctor and your doctor thinks you have a toothache, but in reality you have cancer, you're in big problem. You're in big trouble, right? Because the doctor is going to be going forth looking at your teeth when something else in your body actually needs the attention. Okay? That'd be serious. People who have medical problems need proper care from trained professionals who actually know the situation that you're facing. In our service ministries, discipleship, evangelism, home church leadership, we need to accurately diagnose what we are facing. And then we resource that problem to the best of our ability under the direction of God. So we outline the main problems. It's actually not, it seems kind of like negative or stressful, but if you are recognizing that things are not right and that you are not progressing the way that you want, that's actually a healthy thing for a spiritual influencer to do. Pretending that there's no problem is one of the worst things that you can do. That's just a Pollyanna, that's just a head in the pie in the sky, kind of like, that's not biblical leadership. We can, together, you can, before God, realize, okay, there's a problem. I really want to achieve these goals. I'm not achieving these goals. Why is that? And drilling down into the problem that exists is actually can be a very freeing, kind of a therapeutic exercise. Sometimes, if it's in the context of a leadership team, we can be like, all right, there's a lot of problems. Look, groups are filled with people. They're going to be filled with problems, okay? We're not scared of that. But sometimes you're like, okay, there's a lot of things here, and these things are kind of like off to the side. Like, really, what we need to focus on is this. I'm telling you, that actually just, okay, this is, wow. We've prayed together, we've talked it out, we've sought some counsel. This is the task at hand. There's a centering effect. You know what to pray for. You know what to spend your time on and not get caught up on these little rabbit trails that will take you off center. How about just recalling past victories? Yeah, we've been, I've been in slowdowns before. God saw us through. Yeah, I don't, you know, let's consult the word here, okay? Most biblical leaders experience setbacks and problems, opposition, persecution in various forms. I don't think God left any of them as long as they were being faithful, you know? Huh, yeah. Probably true for us. Right there. Teaching us stuff about just maintaining a sense of humor. Able to laugh at yourself. Wow. There's a leadership skill. There's a leadership trait, characteristic. If you can learn to laugh at yourself, you're not too bent out of shape when, you know, somebody else is pointing out something funny. Hey, we all have foibles, right? You know, we all make mistakes. We all do. I've put my foot in my mouth so many times. Good Lord. Yeah, it's okay. Maintain that sense of humor. And then we have to envision a wonderful future. We spend so much time mired down into the problems and what it's going to take to overcome them, we lose sight of where we're going. I mean, that's biblical thinking, right? That's biblical rhetoric. Think, yeah, this world's broken, rebellious, so awful. Oh my gosh. You know, it's in an endless death spiral of rebellion and experiencing consequences of rebellion and then just wanting to be even more rebellious and on and on and on down. And yet, we have heaven to look forward to. I mean, the Bible's always calling us to remember and wonder about that amazing future that we're going to experience with God. On a smaller scale, a more local scale, we need to do that when we're in one of these situations. We need to recognize, okay, it's going to be sweet when this goal is accomplished. And I think that God could come through in these ways. We need to spend time talking about that, what that's going to be like. That's motivating. That's invigorating at the heart level. This is a great devotional. The Leadership Lessons of Jesus. This is a short, I mean, these devotions are like 6 paragraphs a pop. Very cool if you want something to add to your daily regimen of reading the Word. This is a devotional through the book of Mark. And it just talks about the leadership of Jesus. I mean, obviously straight to the source. And this one's talking about just remaining calm in the storm. The authors write, many appear impressive when everyone is cheering, but a storm is always the true test of leadership mettle. And when he's talking about storm, he picks up on, you know, the storm when the guys are in the boat with Christ. But a storm is basically any one of these problems that we could face in our individual or our team ministry, evangelism, all these things that we're talking about. Anything that we've been talking about here would classify as a storm according to these guys. So the storm is the test of leadership mettle. Being the calm at the center of a storm does not mean being detached or unrealistic. It does mean moving deliberately and positively to handle the situation, instilling faith and driving out unwarranted fear. Restate your mission to let your followers know what you're trying to do is both worthwhile and doable. This is worth it, as tough as it is, and we can do it with the power of God. We need to control our own fears and repress any impulse to panic. We need to speak words of assurance in a calming tone, addressing the problem in a deliberate, measured, effective way. We need to lead through adverse circumstances, not be overcome by them. I have two daughters, 5 and 3. Now, they're wild, okay? They fall all the time. Okay, and so when they were a little bit younger, when they're all around like the age of 2, they're just starting to like branch out. They're running, getting crazy, climbing on stuff. They're always falling. And if you've ever watched a little kid, when they fall down, what's the first thing a little kid does when they fall down? They look at you. Yes, they look at you. Now, if mom or dad is like, oh, God! They're going to start crying. They're so intense. They're like, I'm too young to fully process what's happening, but I'm in real trouble. Okay, that's what they see in your face, okay? But if you're just like, good fall, they're kind of like, they're like, okay, this isn't so bad. They're reading your reaction. So how you react or don't react, whether you're panicked or calm, fretful or reserved, like that's going to affect them. In some ways, that is how you, the influence that you can have when you're standing for God in some sort of capacity. I'm not saying that people are like little kids, but some people look to people in leadership positions to see how they are going to react. And if we react in a calm, measured, faithful way, there's a good chance that people are going to adopt that. And the opposite is also true. Nothing will raise a leader in the eyes of his or her followers more than when he or she effectively handles a crisis. Good word. So we got to focus. So we resist panic. We also focus. Now we focus on the right things and we make a choice not to focus on the wrong things. So we got to figure out what is and is not in your control. Another great resource on this, Boundaries for Leaders by Henry Cloud. He says, the lesson for leaders is clear. Focus your people on what they have control of that directly affects the desired outcomes of the organization. Now, notice what he says. It's not just for you to focus. You are doing that, but you're also helping your people to focus on the right things. What can we actually influence? Not only do you get results, but you also change the brains of your people so they function better and then get even more results in a spiraling upward direction. Ah, the elusive upward spiral. Love the upward spiral. A sense of being in control changes people's brains and affects their performance big time. Help them get a sense of what they can control that affects results and empower them to exercise that control. And you have brains firing with a lot of horsepower. Discipline. Mental discipline. We focus on what we can control and we specifically avoid what we can't control. Now, maybe some of those things are prayer points. Maybe some of them are just like, this doesn't actually matter. Who cares? figure out what is and is not in your control. Let me just, again, let me ask an evergreen question. Now, we've talked about, like, there are so many things that you guys are facing or could face that would fall into one of these storms or leadership struggles. But let's ask this question together. What are some things that are in our control during any time of struggle? Yeah. Yes. So you mentioned two things, faith. I believe, I trust God, and also like kind of like my attitude, like I'm going to just stay with God. I'm not going anywhere. Yes. Yeah.
Our emotions.
Okay? Our emotions, we have them. It's not that we shouldn't have them, but we can control our emotions and how they affect our decisions. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, we always have like a choice of how we react.
Sure. Our reactions. No one can make us react in a way that we don't want. Yeah.
I think, too, how other people decide to respond. Like, are they going to stick it out or are they going to give up? Like, I can't control that, but I can control whether or not I do.
Yep. Good point. Yes.
I guess how we work with people, how we discuss the struggle, we can control it.
Okay, so how you discuss, the discussions maybe you get going with people, what you're trying to get them to think of. Yes. What do you think? Yes, our devotional life. Absolutely. Yeah, all right.
Think about relational vulnerability.
So we can have emotions. We can tell people about them. We have that choice. Totally agree.
Serve and love people still.
Sure can. Maybe we could even widen what you're saying. We can always do what God tells us to do. Maybe not always in the ways that we want. I mean, again, we talked about the start of the pandemic. I mean, in there was just a period of time, maybe of different lengths for some of us, where I'm actually not physically able to love and serve people the way that I was, but I can always do that in some way. I mean, we had a lot more time to pray. We weren't allowed to go outside of our house, you know? Yes, good. You can always teach the word. Yeah, Jay, what do you think?
Set a tone with the people that we're interacting with and the things that we're doing. And there may be more or less capacities of what the effects of that are going to be.
Sure.
But we can control how we are responding and reacting in those things and the attitude that we sort of bring to the table.
Absolutely. So that's we kind of refer that to like tone, or like we sometimes use the word around here, ethos. So we, you know, ethos is kind of like the vibe of a group. I mean, there's doctrine, there's, you know, our statement of faith that says what we believe and what we're going to carry out. But there's an ethos for like how that kind of looks and feels. And we have the ability to control that too, or at least to influence it. Yes. Yeah.
I think we can control the voices that we take counsel from during struggle. I think there's a great temptation, at least for me personally, when I'm struggling to distract myself with really fruitless things like being on social media or the internet or whatever. And then over time, that's what's discipling you with
yeah. right.
And its ideas, and am I going to the counsel of the Lord and other people? Am I taking my thoughts captive and setting them instead of letting them run over me,
mm-hmm.
or just numbing out?
Yeah, so it's really two points embedded in what you said. One, we can always seek out counsel. That's a choice that we have. We can try to get outside help. And two, like what you're saying more specifically, I can choose who I'm going to listen to and who I'm going to ignore. Yeah, what were we going to say?
Oh, I think it was like similar to what he said, but like figuring out like the specific role that you have like during this time. Like, okay, so like we're in the pandemic. Like, how can I serve my house as an individual? Like, even though the pandemic is like above me and I can't do anything, or like in the home church, like what's my role as like a teacher?
Mm-hmm.
My role is like someone that like rallies people up. Like, obviously I can't control like what other people's like reaction to that is, but if I have a clear role, like that'd be much more helpful than like just like sailing and
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but I really agree. Like, maybe some of us here don't have, like, an official title, but we all have a role. I mean, that's how the body of Christ is designed. We're all members of one another, and God has not given all the gifts to one or two individuals. We all have a role to play, and I think that's really good. Like, I can't control, like, who's going to listen to me, but I can say, I'm going to come before God and be like, what do you want me to do today, Lord? I'm here presenting myself to you. What do you want to do? Yeah.
Kind of goes along with choice and reactions. And she was just saying, thinking about captive, but you also get to choose your perspective on whether or not you want to change that or not.
Yeah.
Like cynicism doesn't just happen to you.
Yeah, sure.
A long line of making the choice not to fight these different thoughts and being unwilling to ask yourself the question, what if I'm wrong?
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, one more. Yeah. Consider it pure joy when you experience trials of many kinds, for the testing of your faith produces endurance. We have a choice whether we're going to do that. Should we do a quick thought exercise? What are some things that we can't control in situations? Who listens to us? What other people have? How long it's going to take? The stupid weather! we can continue that for another time. A lot of things that we can't control. Now, in Cloud, in his book, actually says, all right, when you're working with, like, your leadership team, he's like, actually just sit there and kind of, like, bitch to each other about all the stuff you can't control. Just write it on a list. And then he's like, and then write all the stuff that you can't control. And then he says, tear the paper in half. And I'm like, you can just crumple up the things you can't control and throw it in the garbage. But I think somebody pointed out in the previous session, someone's like, those are your prayer points. I can't control the weather, but I definitely pray for the weather. I throw a big party for our sphere, our family of home churches. It's a big cookout, and I'm like, I'm praying a month in advance for sunny weather, okay? I can't control it except through prayer. So maybe I have a little bit of control. I don't know. Okay, figure out what's in your control and not in your control. And I think the advice there is clear about where to focus. Okay, detail, strengths, and resources. One of the most dangerous things about that envy point that we discussed earlier is that when I get so busy lamenting all the resources that other people have that I don't, I stop thinking as much about the resources that I do have. Great generals. I think Ulysses S. Grant was the general who did this a lot. He would just, before battles, he would just walk around the camps and just see what he had at his disposal. How are we going to win? We've got to figure out what resources we have. Obviously, we're in a spiritual war. Bible's clear on that. So we got to figure out what resources has God put at our disposal. If you were in a home church, you got 20 people or so, yeah, maybe they're not all your closest friends. Maybe some you've had squabbles with in the past. Maybe, you know, things aren't turning out the way that you thought. But you still have 20 souls that have been, you know, that have been rescued through a miracle of God's intervention into our world. And they're there. And I bet a few of them would listen. And you start thinking in those terms. Okay, wow, there's actually some resources here. When I go and do the inventory, a lot of times, you're pretty grateful for what you find. And again, it's one of those steps that changes your mentality. God is moving you away from something harmful and towards something fruitful. It's stoking the fires of thanksgiving, which I think you mentioned is really bad when we don't have that. When I can recognize, okay, what's God put on this little task force that I've got? Or, okay, I'm trying to reach a couple of people in my friend group. Okay, what do I have at my disposal? Okay, I've got years of friendship with them. That's sweet. You know, God's put me in a position where I'm not going to get killed or imprisoned for sharing my faith. That's for sure. People might torch me on social media. Who cares? Okay, I've got the Bible. I've got a whole community. I've got classes at my church that tell me kind of like best practices for some of this stuff. Whoa, this is... again, I'm not here trying to say that your struggles aren't real, okay? I don't want that to be the takeaway. What I am saying is that a lot of times when we start to focus, we start to put our eyes literally on the things that we have, not on the things that we're missing, we start to view our circumstances very differently. And I think that we should. All right, there we have it. Oh, I put pray on there. Don't forget that. Any questions? Yeah.
Okay, so I was just thinking a little bit about when you are struggling, and maybe this is not like 100%, but I thought maybe a good principle would also be to like slow down a little bit, because like there's a lot of studies that show like your mind can get warped when you're too busy or too overwhelmed, and then also, you know, making time to pray more perhaps, or really process more, like do some of those things. So I was just thinking like sometimes that can get underrated, and
yeah, really good point. That's probably like, I think that that's probably like figuring out what your main problems are. Maybe that step just needs to be spelled out a little bit more, because you are slowing down your mind. You're not lashing. You're not lunging. You're not reacting. Sometimes say react versus respond is a good like. Especially in conversations, you're actually kind of slowing down, allowing your mind to work. Sometimes you just need to walk away from a problem and then come back. There's studies that show your mind can like do different puzzles like better like when you take a break. Okay, I do spelling bee for the New York Times, and you always try to get the pantagram, which is like, you know, the big one where you get the bonus points. And I'll look at, it's just seven letters, right, with a circle, with a center one that you need to use. And there's been multiple where I'll be like, dude, I'm kind of stumped on this. And then I won't think about it all day. And then I'll just be like plugging in my phone for bed, and it'll just literally pop into my mind what the word is. Crazy. Wow, that happens. Yes, I'm here in the back.
Just a point. I thank God for his sovereignty. And a lot of times I think when we're going through a struggle, there's something that God sees in us that we may not see. So recently I've been trying to focus my prayer on, Lord, what is it in me that you see that I don't see of me and where I am with you? And what is it that you're trying to pull out? And not only that, what is it going to be used for? And so that my struggle isn't just in isolation, it's for something.
Sure.
You know.
Now, do you think that that is, can be like, there's some, like, gifting or ability that you have that he hasn't brought to the surface, or do you feel like maybe it's an issue that you need to work on, or is it sometimes both?
Both, I think. Okay. You know, if he's taking you to another level in ministry, or if there's a place that you may be in error or just need growth, you know, what is it that you're trying to grow up into me, God?
Mm-hmm.
And what is it going to be used for?
Well said. I really appreciate you sharing that. That's a great point. That lines up with the Bible's teaching on all this, right? And what Dr. Mason was saying, it's like a lot of times this is, he puts us through these struggles, he puts us in these times of weakness so that we can be more like Christ. He was talking about that last night. He was talking about, obviously, 2 Corinthians 4 with the jars of clay. Sometimes parts of us need to be chipped out so that more of that power can, from God, can be displayed into the world. Yeah, Art, one more.
I was thinking about a question you asked earlier involving thinking through that. I think we need to get some like forward focus. Maybe the point earlier about hope afterwards. I think that when we're in the midst of like real legitimate pain, the only thing on our mind is the present and getting out of that as soon as possible. And a lot of times it's true, the quickest way to get out of that would be just to throw your hands up and quit. I think, though, we need to ask ourselves, we have some decisions to make. What would it look like? What is the forward progression of these choices? What will life look like 5 years down the line if I make one of these choices here?
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes choosing to quit would be akin to, you know, chemo treatment isn't enjoyable. Choosing to quit chemo treatment has some pretty serious consequences.
Yeah.
I think we need to spell that out and think about that.
There are consequences regardless of what choice we make, and we do need to think about those. Let me just offer one point of clarification. Somebody asked in the earlier session, like, is it ever okay for somebody to, like, step down from a leadership position? And I'm like, this isn't to say, you know, we're talking about quitting. What I'm talking about is basically giving up on the specific commands of God to try to influence the world. Like, you know, we've had instances in our family of home churches where somebody has encountered, like, an intense bout of, like, personal suffering, and they need to step back from, like, a position of leadership for a time. And, like, I think in some cases like that, that's a good thing for them. But what they're not doing is they're not giving up on the things that they were doing as in that leadership position. I mean, when we talk about being a leader in our fellowship, we're talking about trying to win the lost to faith. We're talking about making disciples in various capacities. We're talking about loving the world, practicing the means of growth, teaching the word, that kind of stuff. So if somebody's not just doing that, can't do that because of, you know, tense circumstances or something for a time, you know, an official capacity, that just may be the case. And, like, they're not necessarily being ungodly or unfaithful because they're stepping away from that, but they are still kind of pursuing those ideals and those values of Scripture. So I just wanted to say that. Okay, great discussion. Dude, I love these things. Thank you so much. This is a great hour. We got a lot done. This stuff will all be online probably like next week. I'll be around for a few minutes if you guys want to talk to me. So thanks again and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.